Hello, and thank you so much for watching or listening to the Salesforce Posse podcast. Without you, this podcast could have never have got to the dizzying heights of a top 10% most watched podcast on Spotify. In this conversation, I'm going to be speaking to the amazing Vanessa Grant, who is a business analyst and consultant from Los Angeles and has been in the ecosystem for over 13 years. And she is committed to improving the outcomes of all Salesforce projects by regularly speaking about the importance of quality business analysis. She also co-hosts the Salesforce Career Show on Twitter. My name is Francis Pinder, and on the Salesforce Posse, I speak to Salesforce industry influencers so I can gain a better understanding of how to excel in a career path from a Salesforce admin or developer to an architect. So if you're interested in learning more about what a business analyst does, gain some top tips on managing difficult stakeholders or the challenges that business analysts can get, or even just understand why having good business analyst skills is important for Salesforce admins and devs alike, then I think you're going to get a lot of value out of this conversation with Vanessa. It was a hell of a lot of fun doing it, and there is loads and loads of awesome advice in. So without further ado, let's go. Okay, so hello, Vanessa, to the Salesforce Posse podcast.
Hello, Francis. Thank you so much for having me.
And sorry it's so early in LA. I've had almost my day already. And
well, you know what? That I woke up and put on my face for you, you know, it was absolutely worth it. Well, I guess we'll see, but I expect that it'll be worth it.
Yeah, I'm excited. Excited because you are the BA person, you know, the Salesforce BU, BU, BA. I wouldn't say guru because I never call anybody a guru, but I don't mean call myself a guru. You know, exactly. It's like putting it. But yeah, you are the business analyst in Salesforce that I kind of linked to. And you were the person I wanted to see at London's Calling, which I did. So it was amazing.
I can't even handle that, Francis. Like, you know, that I went to London's Calling. I'm like, oh my God, it's like, I don't get starstruck by too many Salesforce people, but like, I was a little starstruck. I'm still like a little nervous even still being here. So the fact that you wanted to meet me at London's Calling, like clearly my personal branding is like top notch right now.
No, you were absolutely my top. And I said it at the time as well. It was it was great. No, it was really cool. You are everything I think about as Salesforce BA. And also I think it's one of those topics where people need to talk about business analysis more in the Salesforce ecosystem. So which is why I kind of wanted you on the podcast as well. So just before we kind of start, I just wondered, what could you kind of introduce yourself a bit and tell us about your journey kind of into the field of business analysis and how you got into it?
Sure. So I guess I've been doing CRM since I started my career. I was a music business major, and I was doing an internship. The music business died basically because of the internet while I was in college. So I ended up taking a sales ops role at a SaaS organization that sold products to radio stations. And when you're at a radio company, it is not too difficult to be the only person who cares about the data. So I very quickly became like the CRM data person, the spreadsheet person. And, you know, after going through Sales Logics and Goldmine, and we acquired a few companies, Sugar CRM, Custom Database at one point, Microsoft Access, like the whole gamut. In 2010, by then I was the VP of Business Operations for the SaaS organization because it had kept growing. And my very heartwarming trailblazer story was we needed to have a unified CRM. I did a few demos and I signed the dotted line and Salesforce came into my life.
Awesome.
So I've been doing, Salesforce since 2010. Business analysis, though, I think I was always doing business analysis, but I didn't have the vocabulary to say that I was doing business analysis until I got laid off from that company. I'd been there for 17 years. I kind of did a weird like sidestep as a DocuSign consultant, and they sat me next to the IT business analyst.
Right.
And I asked what she did. And she told me what she did. And I was like, wow, that sounds like stuff I've been doing, but I really love Salesforce. I always thought I wasn't technical enough for Salesforce. So let me Google Salesforce business analyst. And then my new career was formed.
Brilliant.
That's the story.
Yeah, it's amazing how many people have started. Yeah, because I was kind of a bit the same way. It's like, they needed a CRM. I searched for lots of CRMs, found Salesforce, saw it, signed, got it, saw it, and went, yeah, I want more of this. And that was it, right?
So I can't wait for my golden hoodie. So heartwarming, Mister.
So what kind of like, so you said like you kind of, you saw them and they said, wow, this is cool stuff. But what kind of motivates you to kind of stay in business analysis in the Salesforce world?
I loved Salesforce. Like when it's hard to explain, like, you know, you never see your first Salesforce demo again, but that first Salesforce demo, like I had been doing business operations for years at this point. And Salesforce was the first time I saw a cloud-based CRM. So that was, I mean, to date myself a little bit, but that was the first time. And it solves so many of my problems. Like I already could think in my head while I was watching the demo, all the systems that I'd be able to deprecate because of Salesforce. And yeah. So I just loved Salesforce. And I ended up homegrowing my own admin. I had four devs that worked on my team. And I knew all the cool stuff you could do with Salesforce. And so I really wanted to stay in Salesforce, but I didn't know how because I didn't have any certifications, even though I'd been doing it for a decade. And so having the vocabulary and knowing that there were positions that needed my expertise, that needed those soft skills, was a direction all of a sudden for okay, these are skills that I can hone. Plus, I can still hone my technical skills and kind of make myself the best BA that's, you know, that I can be. I will say I'm a little surprised that even in the years that I've been doing this business analysis thing, that more folks haven't kind of come up and, you know, spoken up about it more. I'm not sure what it is about BA. You know, I guess it's like soft skills team of, you know, a few of us here, but.
But then also, I think it's always been confusing as well, because like, I always think of Salesforce as such a business application, right? And like all the projects I see, you know, the most successful ones, the ones that are driven by the business and not IT. Yeah. And why that isn't more of a thing, I don't know, you know.
It's maddening. Yeah. And I don't know if it's just that there's, I don't know if there's just like maybe like not as much respect for those types of skills, but it's true. I've seen the projects doing consulting for years now and having been in operations for years, you know, when you have the IT team, you know, block you from speaking to stakeholders because, oh, we don't want to bother them, like blows my mind. When you have like terrible user stories or terrible requirements gathering or when you're trying to, oh, we'll just deal with that in the build or in UAT, you know, because we don't want to focus on the requirements gathering. Like I've seen multi-million dollar projects like teeter on god-awful user stories. And I don't understand how people still think business analysis, oh, let's just throw a few entry-level BAs in there who've never written a user story for this multi-million dollar thing. It'll be cool. No problem.
Yeah, it'll be fine. Yeah, we'll fix it in UAT, yeah?
Yeah, all good. We'll catch it in the build.
Love it. Catch it. That's my new phrase. Catch it in the build. Okay, so for those who are literally coming from this from a complete fresh view and has no idea what a business analyst is, what is a business analyst? What do you get up to, you know, as a day-to-day job?
Well, I like to think overall a business analyst is the person who bridges the business and the technology side of a project. It's a very project-based role generally. And so what we do is we go and speak to our business stakeholders. Usually there's some sort of initiative, so some sort of a project that needs to happen, some sort of business objective that needs to be met. We go in, we speak to the proper business stakeholders. So part of it is identifying those stakeholders and managing them, getting the requirements for the particular project that we're working on. Depending on if it's agile or waterfall, how you actually document those requirements might look a little bit different. But then it's also taking those requirements and throughout the build. So if you're working with a development team, maybe that's admins, maybe that's a developer, maybe it's you if you're a solo admin, because you should still be doing business analysis if you're a solo admin. And working on those requirements, building them, taking them through UAT. Now, the BA isn't necessarily the one that's building them, doing any of the hands-on work, especially in larger projects. They might in smaller ones. It depends. Right now in our industry, it's still a little bit up in the air on how hands-on a BA should be. Mm. But I think a BA is always part of the development team. You want them in the room so that they are, one, giving you feedback on the work. So oftentimes the BA is the person that's closest to those end users, that's closest to those stakeholders, and they can see how a build is going and say, oh, geez, I know that's not going to work for Jeff, the accountant guy. Like let's talk through this a little bit. I know that what you did actually meets their requirements, but Jeff is very particular about this thing, you know? And yeah. And that's like insight that you can't get just from looking at a user story or looking at a requirement and building it out. I also think BAs are really helpful along the line of going back to the business if the development team has any questions, so that they can speak to the dev team and ask the business the questions that they need, that they can go to. I think there is a misconception that a BA will gather requirements and then kind of go into a cave until they go into the next project.
Oh, yeah.
So it's, for me, I think of the BA as besides gathering those requirements, writing them out in however style the project's going to be delivered, it's also, you know, keeping those requirements all the way to the end, evolving them as needed, getting the information they need as needed, and then helping them get tested so they see them through all the way to production.
Yeah. So based on you being a BA, how do you need any Salesforce skills at all if you're just talking to the business?
I think if you're going to be a Salesforce BA, you do. Yeah. So here's the thing, like part of being a business analyst, and I'm going to quote Ian Gotz on this, is coaching your users into what's possible. And when he said that, it resonated with me a lot, because if you have to be able to ask questions in a way where you're kind of thinking like, okay, where do I think our architect or our admin is going to go with this? And let me ask the questions that will help me help them figure out how to solve this. Now, I'm not necessarily going to put any solutions in my user stories, but I want to be able to ask the questions so I get the information that my architect would need to actually make the best decision. And part of that is I have to understand the Salesforce platform. If you write your user stories, your requirements in like just the wrong way, like you'll end up accidentally rebuilding Salesforce in code just because you don't know what's the out-of-the-box features are.
Yes.
Yes.
I think it is this kind of, it's a happy marriage, isn't it? Or, you know, you need to have that to understand, you know, where Salesforce can really maximize your investment in Salesforce and how it will link to the business, and how actually you don't need to implement these processes because you could automate it in a different way using chatter rather than an email, right? Or whatever it may be.
Absolutely. And, you know, the other aspect of it is when you're a business analyst and you are very project-based, especially if you've been in consulting for a bit, you've seen a lot of ways that Salesforce can fix business processes, how different companies have done things. And so besides coaching them into what's possible in Salesforce, it's also helping them get coached into what's possible in their business. You know, so Ash Finnegan at Conga actually said this, and it stuck with me, where she said, if you take a bad business process and then you throw Salesforce on it, all you have is a faster bad business process. And so talking to your stakeholders, not even just about, okay, tell me your requirements and then let's throw some Salesforce on it. Like, okay, let's talk about your business first and see what we can fix so we don't have to build this massive custom thing to accommodate your garbage process. Like, sorry, I don't tell them that it's a garbage process time, but it's what I'm thinking in the back of my head sometimes, because there's so many businesses that just think that they're like super unique flowers.
We've always done it this way because it's the best way. We tried loads of different other ways and it never worked, but this is the best way, right?
So some of it is that, you know, getting into their confidence, letting them, you know, having them trust you because you've done this and you've seen this. And again, this is where I'm like, not all business analyst roles are entry level. Having seen a lot of businesses use Salesforce well is such a benefit to your future clients.
Absolutely. And Yeah, and that is the value of it. And it's bridging the gap between tech and business, I think. They are the way, they can communicate both ways. They can understand that actually the way the tech has translated this into, is not right, right? And in the same way, from the business as well. So when I think of VAs, I think of them as coming from three different perspectives, right? So it's kind of like the kind of business architecture or enterprise BA, then the kind of the program BA, and then a project BA. And I think they have different skills and different level. And I think it's as the business grows, right, you become more and more kind of abstracted away, I suppose, from the doing. And I think so many Salesforce projects, they're very much the BA. And you're an admin as well, or it's a small project. It's not a global implementation project type thing, because they're a lot smaller. I don't really know where this question's going, except for...
I'm waiting.
Except for, do you think in the same way? Do you see, a BA working as a, or a solo admin, needs BA skills, and architect and project management, and, you're a jack of all trades,
designer.
Right? yeah, exactly. But then as the program or project grows or the company grows, it morphs into something different, right?
I agree with that. It broke my heart when they took the admin certification out of the prereq for the business analyst certification.
Yeah.
If they're going to do that, it's almost like I want them to add a business analyst section into the admin exam, because yeah. At the smallest level, you need business analysis to run Salesforce projects, to have a healthy Salesforce org. If you are an order taker and you don't actually understand how your business runs, if you are not an internal trusted advisor to your business on how to leverage Salesforce to reach your business goals, then you are not, in my opinion, a top-notch admin, like a top-notch solo admin. You need those skills. Business analysis is the foundation for any healthy Salesforce org, in my opinion. So maybe that's a little, controversial. I'm sorry, everybody else who has their own specialties, but this is my show, or your show, but I'm on it today. But it's at the most basic level, BA is a hat that you wear. So if you're a solo admin, you still have to wear the hat. When your projects are bigger, I've worked on internal teams where it was just me and a solo admin. So it was just me and a solo admin working. So I did all the user stories. I did all the requirements gathering. They acted as the architect, the day-to-day admin. And that's what worked. And it was like a 500 person org. It was decent size. But then I've also moved into consulting, where all of a sudden I'm the lead BA, and I've got 14 BAs that work under me, and we have various work streams, and we have to work with an enterprise architect and a whole bunch of solution architects, and it's a gigantic, oh my God, how do we coordinate this? So at that level, forget it. I'm not even writing a user story at this point. I'm just trying to make sure that we're organized and that we're all doing things the same way. We all kind of have the same principles as far as how we gather these requirements and run our meetings and the governance, I guess, that kind of comes with the larger initiatives that are going to take a year or whatever. But yes, there's different, I don't know that I've had the different titles of the business analyst. I think maybe you might have some more insight into that. I've been mostly consulting, but certainly the size of the project, or if you're internal versus consulting, has made a difference in what the role might look like.
I think when I first got introduced actually to business analysis as a thing, it was way before Salesforce, and it was a baptism of fire in the most extreme way, I think. And it was a project where it started off as a small project to see if e-learning would work for the Metropolitan Police, the London Police in the UK. And we were successful, and it was. And then the Home Office, the UK government, kind of said, that's great, roll it out across the whole of the country. And we're like, need a bit more money. And also, every force is completely separate, right? The way they do training. So it was like 52 different different, yeah, different counties with their own forces. And so there was a BA team and they needed me to help out because they were bringing all of them together for a day. And they had two representatives from every single force to just do a massive loads of workshops going on, doing requirements all day. And it was crazy. You know, I was doing data entities, which was, you know, what data do you store against people and training and stuff like that. And then half the group would leave to join another group, and then another group would come in to join this group, and they'd cross get the requirements. It was quite, it was crazy. But also,
it's like
mine was
the requirements gathering speed dating.
It was nuts. And they had like a, every room had a shorthand typewritist or whatever, you know, just recording and documenting everything that was going on. But mine became, sorry, the ice cream vans just turned up outside. but mine became the hardest because suddenly all these forces realized that actually all the data is being centralized and now you could do your own reports and now find out really what's going on and all this kind of stuff. So from no BA to running this workshop, it was crazy. But it was brilliant, you know. Yeah, it's learned a lot from the people on that. Yeah, the BAs there. Yeah, and then eventually rolled it out across the whole of the country, and now every policeman in the country hates me because rather than going off to their country estates to do their training, they just do it in between their work when they get a few minutes on their computer. So
that's awesome, but, though.
Yeah, but that, yeah, it was nuts. But yeah, it was that, yeah, kind of crazy scale, and yeah, and just every force did it completely differently. It was mental, and I think for me that was kind of like, first a baptism of fire, and also just the lead there that just ran that business analysis team was just amazing at, you know, the amount of requirements that came out and how you kind of put them into matrices and dedupe them and see what, yeah, it was incredible to watch and see. But yeah, and I think, yeah, that was my kind of introduction to it all, I suppose. What are the kind of the challenges that business analysts have in their kind of day job, I suppose, that you might think that kind of, or even like, you know, a situation where you kind of really put to the test as a business analyst?
I would say there's, because I would say in general, business analysis doesn't quite get the respect that it deserves. And that's even on the client side. People get so focused on, we need to build something. We need output. We need to show something for our work. And when we're just writing a whole bunch of user stories, that's not tangible to them. And so it becomes challenging where they want to rush to build so much that they don't understand the value of that whole shift left mentality of making sure that we're getting those requirements right, making sure that we're optimizing those business processes first, making sure that we have the time to speak to the right stakeholders. So when an IT department gets in my way and won't let me speak to a business stakeholder because they're like, no, we just have to keep going. That makes it really challenging for me. And it's frustrating because you want to, at the end of the day, deliver something quality, but if you have to rush your writing, if you have to rush requirements gathering, if you can't speak to all the people that you need to, and you know that there are gaps, if you don't have time to do a business process maps to make sure that you don't have any user stories missing, it can be frustrating because you know you're kind of almost kicking the can down the road. But at certain times, it's especially in consulting, you know, you do have to kind of appease the project management and client gods. And that's probably the most challenging part, is not taking some of that stuff personally, but also just doing your best with the time that you have. I mean, I think that's everybody's challenge, you know, is how do we do our best and given the time and budget constraints that we have often.
So with these challenges, what do you think are the kind of the crucial skills a business analyst should have and why?
Well, I think having empathy is probably the big thing for business analysts. And
well, that rules me out then.
Well, I'm not sure to go with that. I was going to make a sociopath comment, but I don't know. This is the forum. Right, podcast. Click, especially since I know that you're recording my intro after this, so I've got to be. Okay, exactly. I mean, I think empathy is really important. You have to be able to build trust, and you have to likability is a kind of a thing in business analysis. I find if you don't get your stakeholders to like you, if you don't get your clients to like you, if you don't get the dev team to like you, you just don't kind of hear the almost kind of like the backroom stuff, that guy's holding on to that spreadsheet for dear life. And that's our major problem. We just can't say anything because he's the CEO's son. That's the kind of stuff that you need somebody to actually tell you so you can build the right thing and have the right conversations. But if they don't trust you, if they don't like you, if you don't have empathy if you go in and you're like, oh, I'm the Salesforce person, I'm amazing and all your business processes are garbage, people are going to get defensive. So I don't even know that those are skills. You kind of have to build up those skills through experience. And I think some of them come naturally, but it really is, I would say, the big things that I would say with business analysis. And part of that is also convincing those stakeholders that business analysis is important. There's some education there that if we don't do this right now, you are going to see it in the build. You are going to see it in the bugs that come out. You're going to see it in SIT. So it's frustrating.
It's harder to change then than it is now.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's somehow, getting it through to them is always a bit of a challenge. And I think also it's I remember when I was doing some analysis and I could see the person completely just shutting down almost, because then it was almost like the light went off in their head. They were like, oh, what I'm telling you is basically doing me out of a job. It wasn't, but they thought it was, right? And that was, again, I was like, how do I even, communicate? And again, that trusted advisor piece, it's getting to that, the real requirements, right, of why things are happening and being trusted, having that empathy, which you're absolutely right. You kind of uncovers things that you wouldn't naturally have been told if you were first brought into the organization or whatever.
Absolutely. You want to, when you're going in, ultimately those stakeholders are going to a certain extent, feel like, oh my God, they're changing my job, so I must have been doing my job wrong. And so there is a little bit of that defensiveness. So if you can kind of switch that perspective and go, I'm here to help you. How can I make your life easier? How can I save you 2 hours a day? That approach tends to work better for me because it ends up, besides building some of that teamwork, they want to enable me to succeed.
Yeah. And I think also it's such an art, a really good BA. It's that, it's having that rapport, being able to communicate well, being their friend, having that rapport, but also knowing the right questions to ask, right? And I always think that, there's some BAs that are, let's work out the process, here is the process, but they've missed these exceptions to the rule. And actually being able to kind of pull those out so that it doesn't screw up later down the project is, and so we can't do this because Jeff is in the US and he has different rules or whatever it is. I don't know, these governments, being a great BA and asking the right questions is, kind of important as well. But so I don't know, what are the kind of the techniques or approaches you come to when you're kind of dealing with complex business situations and these kind of exceptions and pulling them out? Do you have an approach to that,
Well, it depends on what role I'm playing on that particular project, and how much, how soon they bring me into the process. So, a lot of times when you've got these projects, it can be kind of okay. Well, I just show up at the client's office and then all of a sudden there's 6 hours of meetings that I have no idea what even the scope of the project is. And there's only so much I can do on those days. And thankfully I have enough experience that I go, okay, let's roll up our sleeves and get this done and start from wherever I can start. If I have more time, you know, having, I think a bit of planning is very helpful. So for example, if we understand the scope of what we're implementing, if we understand what clouds we're implementing or what features we're implementing, sometimes clients are very specific or some projects are very specific. Like they have bought a bunch of, you know, Salesforce Maps licenses. Okay, I guess I have to learn Salesforce Maps. I don't necessarily know on day one what questions I need to ask about Salesforce Maps, but do I have enough time to understand at a high level the features, again, so I can coach them into what's possible so that I can really get a sense of how they're trying to use this thing? The planning in that sense, I think, is really important. And I think the planning on a project level is important, especially if you have a large project. So are we all on the same page for how we're going to enter user stories? Are we all on the same page as far as how we're going to approach requirements gathering? And that's not just the team. It's also, you know, whoever our stakeholders are. Are we comfortable with the timeline? Are we comfortable with the amount of time that we're going to give to each other? The governance around that is, I think, important. But again, it's, you know, it's always those time and budget constraints.
Yeah. When I worked in design, doing kind of films and post-production, it was like, when does the design process finish? Well, it's when they run out of money or run out of time. That was it. It just carried on all the way up to the limit, right? And it's the same, right? You know, it's, but okay. So what are the kind of tools and technologies that have kind of made the biggest impact in your work and or what you use?
Oh, I'm a huge Jira nerd.
Oh, right, yeah.
Like a big Jira nerd. So I would say I use Jira quite a bit, and I've turned into like the, oh, you want to see real time how we're doing? Let me whip up a dashboard. Let me throw in some gadgets. Because there's so much documentation in business analysis, and everybody from the devs to the project managers to the BAs use Jira. I generally have a philosophy of if you're going to document something, you have to centralize it and then you have to socialize it. And a Jira dashboard is always just kind of the easiest spot. Like, great, any important document you need for this project, any process you need, it's all going to be on that Jira dashboard and everybody can move to that spot and adopt whatever the overall governance for the project is. That's a big thing. So I love Jira. Great for that. I also use Lucidchart fairly frequently. So good. I'm glad I have your endorsement on that one. But that I use fairly frequently. So for business process mapping, it's great, especially since I do a lot of stakeholder interviews over Zoom, just to kind of work on a visual together. Of course, there's going to be PowerPoint. Of course, there's that's just part of it, especially if I'm doing demos. There's usually a PowerPoint portion. And then we're going to like, okay, let's go into the demos. Today, I'm going to be Sally, the salesperson. And we're going to go through, you know.
Here's my persona today.
I guess there's acting as part of it.
When I'm wearing this hat, I'm Jeff.
It happens. I've got my other glasses here. These don't actually work, but I do use them, especially when I do my click sessions. I think the other thing that I use oftentimes at the start of a project would be OneNote. I don't know if that's like maybe that's a little, you know, kind of. I know it's like a little.
No, actually, I know other BAs that gravitate to using OneNote as well. I tried and never really got into it, to be honest. I'm more of kind of like a Notion or a, you know.
I wanna upgrade to Notion, Francis. Yeah. I've heard good things. I'm a little intimidated, but I know I have to go on my continuous learning journey, and part of that is upgrading my note system at some point.
But Lucidchart, use Lucidchart all the time. And actually, now I've been told I need to do some architecture diagrams in Archimat. They've just released the Archimat stencil layout of shapes in Lucidchart as well, which is great. Although now I've got to remember how to use Archimat, but that's another story.
Oh, you know, the Salesforce life that we live is just like There's always something new to learn. And it's not even like Salesforce related, like part of the time. It's like, okay, this new role that we have to learn, all of a sudden we got to learn AI here. We've got to learn this new tool. Like, so it's Notion here, Archimat here. Like, it's really like you have to love continuous learning if you're in Salesforce, which, you know, thankfully we do.
Or even I think SaaS in general, isn't it? It's like, I don't think it was AWS, and this is when they last released it. It was probably like 10 years ago. We're doing like 50,000 releases a day on their platform, right, of new features and stuff like that. And like, how just even at the moment when Salesforce are doing three releases a year, but they're now talking about actually having a continuous release like AWS. And the other SaaS provider, I think that's just going to go crazy. You know, it's like, it's literally continuous learning. It's going to be bonkers. So have you seen like a kind of like an evolution in the way that business analysis is kind of documented, or your thoughts around kind of data analytics and AI in business analytics? Has that helped? Is it not? Kind of more future thinking of what the role may become. Or how AI might help,
Oh, absolutely. That I've been having to think about a lot. Being apparently the person that seems to be the most outgoing when it comes to business analysis, which still surprises me. Listen, guys, I'm not selfish. If anybody wants to join me here, it's lonely. It's lonely. But with artificial intelligence, so there's a few things that come to mind when it comes to how it might impact business analysis. One, there's going to be all sorts of neat tools, and there are already some neat tools. So when I do a requirements gathering session, having one of those like AI kind of bots in the Zoom with me that'll transcribe and then, kind of put everything into like little bullets, like, what? Like that's amazing.
I can't live without my Otter anymore. It's like, it's ridiculous. It's like, actually, even for this podcast, when we did our call, I was literally just grabbing the notes, asking it, what were the top questions we are, and it's like, literally use it all the time now. It's crazy.
Love that. So that's awesome. Even just like part of a current project that I'm working on is working on Snap Logic, which does integrations. Ask ChatGPT, like, can you just give me a standard user story for Snap Logic integrating with Salesforce? And it just spit out something. I was like, oh, okay. So just to kind of give me what does the user story for this integration thing look like? Was helpful. So I think even kind of getting us set up in that regard, when I talked earlier about setting up Salesforce maps, and I'd never done Salesforce maps before, when I could ask an AI, give me the major features that I need to know about before I implement this major thing, this major bit of functionality, and helping me kind of hone my questions a little bit so that it's not just a whole bunch of Googling, that's going to be really helpful. There's so much. Have you seen the Elements Cloud demo that they're doing with AI?
Yeah.
That kind of like scared me a little bit, but like in a good way. Like that if you have your business process maps that, and it reads all your metadata, that it's going to like generate user stories as well as pull in well-architected best practices to come up with a preliminary solution. Like all of the BAs and solution architects, like this is the future. So we need to start thinking about it. How do we fit into that? But I don't think it's going to replace us necessarily as, make us
more
efficient, more productive. Yeah. I mean, everybody says that admins wear too many hats right now. And even architects, there's so much to learn. And it is overwhelming to have that continuous learning. But if we do have these kind of accelerators, so we don't necessarily have to be an expert on everything and leverage AI to kind of get us to where we need to be, I think that'll be a great thing. But I'm really curious to see what the future brings.
Yeah. And I think it's just kind of like giving. And like when I started my IT journey at uni almost, or even before university, doing computer, actually even years before that, to be honest, it was very Yeah, you had to learn assembly language at university because everybody used this 68,000 CPU in everything, and that's the jobs that were there. And
Francis, I just have to pause you for a second. Assembly is like what made me switch majors from computer science to music business. I was like, I can forget it. Computers aren't for me.
It's kind of like the fundamental language of a computer, right?
Triggered.
But then things, you just get abstracted away more and more. Like even Salesforce, right? You don't need, like my excitement for Salesforce was like, oh my word, I don't need to create a database and then create a field on it and then create the business logic to talk to that field to get the results out to show it in the UI. I was like, I just add the field and that's it, you know, and I think AI is the same, right? All it is we're pushing that layer up again, right? And making it more efficient and more easier to do things in IT. And that actually we can become more of an architect, more of that business thinking, to know the right questions to ask, to then ask the AI or, you know, to create those kind of those answers for us. Because if you don't put the right questions in, you're not going to get the right answers out. And also being able to interpret the result and go, well, actually, I know that's wrong, or I know that won't scale, and having that level of understanding to be able to kind of, okay, it's done 60% of it, but actually I do need to tweak it and fix it for my actual need, I suppose.
Yeah, even just getting that like initial user story written, it's so hard to learn how to write a user story. So I talk about entry-level BAs, like learning how to write a good user story is challenging. But if AI can kind of close that gap a little bit faster because it has already written something, you just need to make sure that it's clear, that it's, you know, that it's, you know, that it'll make it through the rest of your project. Like there might be, you know, more of a case to bring people that maybe are only like fantastic at this one thing, but maybe have never written a user story before and still have it be a successful initiative. Yeah. You know, it'll be interesting to see, you know, where it might be able to close some gaps a little bit faster so that maybe folks that are transferring skills might be able to accelerate in certain areas a little bit quicker.
Yeah. Cool. So before I ask my very last question, I've got one last nearly last question, hopefully, which is if somebody was interested in starting out their career as a business analyst, what was the first thing you think they should start doing, or the first takeaway or approach to take to start down that road?
I'm gonna say it. I know it's still controversial. Get your admin certification. I think every BA needs to have an admin certification. And so it's going to be the same start as if you're going to be an admin, because you know what? You're still going to need to wear that BA hat if you do get an admin role. And usually when you're getting your first Salesforce role, you're kind of looking for BA or admin roles. Get your admin certification. Understand Salesforce. Beyond understanding Salesforce, I think working on the... So things that were beneficial to me, I would say were, I got a Scrum Master certification pretty early on, when I was a business analyst, and it's a 2-day course and with like a 90-something% pass rate. And just now that doesn't mean that I'm like an amazing Scrum Master, but it meant that I learned Agile, like formally. I didn't have company that was like with their budget constraints and their time constraints teaching me this like, you know, janky version of Wagile, which is what you see in so many of these projects. So understanding it formally, especially since BAs tend to be very project based, I found to be a really great way to go into new jobs and or even new projects and being able to pick out dysfunction on teams because you understand what it should look like in a formal sense.
Hmm. Oh, brilliant. Have you got anything else before I ask my final question?
Anything else on how to be a good BA?
Anything
I would say,
at all, really?
Well, you know, Salesforce has been funding Clicked. So I do Clicked coaching.
Oh, cool.
It's a free program. So there are people that sign up. I've done these business analyst and admin sprints, they call them. I mean, they can be anywhere from 2 to 5 weeks where it's kind of a safe place to write user stories, gather requirements. Like, they actually role play and work in teams to deliver kind of a fake Salesforce project. And it's a great way to kind of be hands-on as much as you can in a business analyst sense, without kind of screwing any orgs up. So I do recommend those because they're free. It's great for developing that vocabulary. A lot of times when you're going for business analyst roles, you don't necessarily understand the vocabulary. You don't necessarily understand the vocabulary of agile. You don't necessarily understand the vocabulary of business analysis. And so going through these experiences, going through Trailhead, of course, and understanding what words are used for that particular role will help you find the roles and also help you in your job interviews and also help you do your jobs, because those are the things that you're going to need to know about. So the things that you can research further.
Cool. One question I did want to ask you was, I didn't realize until you came to London's Calling that you actually got quite nervous before presenting. And I think it's quite a common thing. A lot of people do get it. And I've come from the theatre background where you do get it a bit when I'm, you know, presenting, but I think it's a different thing for me, right? And I just wondered what your kind of coping mechanisms were and how you kind of approached it when you do public speaking. Because you're amazing at it. You know.
Oh, I don't know if I'm amazing at it, but thank you. It's so funny because, like, I can do these podcasts. Don't get me wrong, I've got clammy hands because, you know, I'm in a podcast with Francis Pinder. But you throw me in front of a PowerPoint presentation. Like, I'm fine online. You throw me in front of a PowerPoint presentation and, like, lose my mind, especially, like, in public. And I'm not sure what it is. And it's something even since I was a kid where, like, if I ever had to present something in front of the class, like, I could visibly shake. I still, like, even at London's Calling, like, I was, like, white-knuckling that podium so hard. Like, yes, I was funny. Like, yes, I got everything out. But, like, I left my body and, like, blacked out for the, I don't know, the 25 minutes or whatever it was. As far as coping mechanisms, you know, I would love to say practicing helps. Having people kind of see the presentation and validate that it's going to be okay helps. But, you know, it's kind of a just having people support me. Like, when I was at London's Calling, in the front row was Tom Bassett, Melissa Shepherd, and Payman Lum. Pay does not need my session. Tom does not need my session. Melissa Shepherd does not need a session on user stories. But they were there for me, you know? Yep. And so just having that kind of, like, safe bubble in the front, and I knew I was going to get hugs in the end. I got hugs in the beginning. And just having those friendly faces, you know, I guess it's part of what's great about being in the community. But but having those friendly faces, people who are going to give me hugs beforehand, you know, maybe it's a little touchy feely, like, yeah, I want to say you should power pose and, like, practice your session more. But, like, for me, it's really having support in the form of friends.
Yeah. No, cool. Yeah. It's a weird thing. I think when I was doing theater as a kid, you know, it was scripted, you know. I went on stage, I set my lines, I did what needed to be, and you're off again. But it's very, you know, this is the way it went. And I remember, you know, public speaking was this, oh my word, you know, not scripted, deer in the headlights, you know, different thing, right? And even now I kind of think, yeah, I kind of get now overconfident and go off on a tangent. And then afterwards I'm worse. It's like, I'm freaking out after the fact going, oh my word, people think I'm a nutter, right? You know, I was at the World Tour and I just was kind of running out of time. I'm like, you know what, Sonny, let's go. You know, I'm sure everybody thought I was a complete nutter by the end of it. But, you know, but you got your message across, you know, all good. But yeah, and then I freak out afterwards. So yeah.
I freak out afterwards. I will, like, lose sleep for an entire weekend over, like, one thing that I think I said stupid over the, you know, if I made, like, one bad joke, or I think I made a bad joke, or that person fell asleep, or whatever it was, like, they may have just been looking at, like, I will lose sleep for the weekend afterwards too. And, like, Francis, like, it's one of the best worst problems to have. Like, like, I have I'm doing, I think, 4 sessions at Dreamforce. I'm freaking out today about Dreamforce in the future.
And I bet they're all on Wednesday, because that always happens to me. They're always on the same day. And you're like running between us. Yeah.
It's all right.
That's cool.
I'll get through it.
You'll be fine.
Just have Melissa Shepherd sit in the front. It'll be all right.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. I'll send you a cardboard cutout and I can be there, you know, virtually.
That'd be lovely. I just want a cardboard cutout. If it makes Dreamforce, then that's cool. I just want to put it in the background for when I do Salesforce interviews.
Okay. You ready for the final question?
All right. Ready for the final question.
Here we go. So I ask it to most people, if I remember, it is, if you could wind back time to a point in time in your past and you could give yourself some advice, what point in time would that be? And what advice would you give?
Well, in addition to going back to 2010, when I discovered Salesforce and telling myself to buy stock, I would tell myself to get involved in the Salesforce community more. It took me a good decade before I really dove into the Salesforce community. And where I think that held me back was I didn't get any certifications because I didn't need to. I didn't really learn things as Salesforce was evolving because, you know, I was doing my job okay. It felt like it was going okay. I didn't necessarily understand the technical debt I was accumulating. And they say everybody screws up their first org. And I think to that first org that I managed, and like the person who's in there now, she sees me and she's like, wow, that's the person that's like the business analysis person on this org.
Somebody came up to me at an event and said, you know, from this company I worked decades ago, and said, oh yeah, I've seen your name in our code. And I was like, oh my. And I'm like, yeah, that's when I started learning Apex, right? It's like, it's working, right? It's working.
So it's besides the getting into the certifications and the learning, I think back in 2010 when I was starting things, like you could conceivably say that you knew everything about Salesforce, and I probably thought I knew everything about Salesforce then. Nowadays I need people to get me to resources, because just finding those resources isn't fast enough because there's too much going on. There's too many changes happening quickly. And so tapping into the community, if I have a problem in a specific area, now I know who to ask so they can point me to the thing that I need.
And even just Googling things is really difficult, especially when, you know, like CRM analytics, how many times has that changed its name? It's like even what you search on, right?
Now I know, okay, I'm just going to send a message to Will Turner and he's going to...
And I think this is it. And also, I think this is where the industry is going anyway. It's like people are becoming their kind of experts in their field, in one area, in a certain area of Salesforce, in a certain industry. And I think, you know, companies and consultancies are just going to gravitate to those people and wanting them to work for them, because they know they are that kind of the guru, without saying guru, you know, the person that's kind of influential in that space and knowledgeable in that kind of space. But thank you so much.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you making getting up at 6:30 in the morning completely worthwhile. It was awesome here. Awesome hanging out with you. You're awesome. I really like you as a person. I mean, you know, not weird. Sorry, let's not end this weird. Please be nice to me in my intro.
No, it's been a blast. Thank you so much for being on the show. And we'll definitely catch up very soon, virtually, at some point.
Really, and I mean that genuinely. So nice to meet you. Thank you.
Yeah, you too. Cool. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for watching or listening to the Salesforce Posse podcast. Now, please, 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 if you like or what you see or hear, then please rate this podcast in your podcast player, as it tells me that there are people out there that actually are listening to this and that it's useful to them. Also, it helps the podcast algorithms to kind of elevate the podcast in the different podcast directories, which will be really helpful for me as well. well. And finally, if you do have a question that you want to ask on the podcast, then head to salesforceposse.com/message and maybe you'll appear in the next podcast. But apart from that, thanks for listening, and until next time, ta-ta.